8:37 on April 13th, 2005. For the record, let the record show that we're joined by Representative Coring, Harris, Rokeberg, Coghill, and Cartula. Representative McGuire is in a joint hearing on the Attorney General's nomination. We got a confirmation hearing this morning. On the agenda today will be House Bill 16, school funds relating to boarding schools, House Bill 156, Alaska Commission on Aging, and House Bill 121, service areas, second class boroughs. But with that, we'd go ahead and take up HB 16. Representative Coghill, what would you like to do in this in terms
Thank
of
you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the House Bill 16 met in the Finance Committee, and they came up with a suggestion, but the meeting happened in such a way that we really didn't come up with a wording, but we came up with the idea, and so that's why I asked for a rules hearing on House Bill 16. And House Bill 16 is expansion of the boarding school program, where we'd actually become partners with school districts, and the state would share a stipend for those who are in boarding schools, actually pay for a trip to and from the boarding school, and chip in for a boarding school. But it's designed to fund those who only have boarding schools presently, which there's three that would be affected right now. There's one in Galena, one in Bethel, and one in Nenana, my hometown. And it would only go for a five-year period. We have an effective date on here that says that at the end of the 5 years, we'll reevaluate. And I got grilled pretty good in the Finance Committee on, okay, how do we tell how effective this is? And in my own spirited way, I said that, okay, let's figure that out. And so what I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, is I would like to move amendment number one, which puts into this a reporting program.
Let me object so you can explain it.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's amendment A.3, Michelle, 4805.
Yes, sir.
I'll mark that as amendment number one, and it's before us on the motion.
And this says that no later than February 10, that the department will provide the legislature and the governor a report on the effectiveness and recommendations on continuation of the program, and make a report available to the legislature. So it's a reporting mechanism that talks about the efficacy of these boarding programs. And I've been assured by Eddie Jeans from the department, who said that they could absorb the cost of the report. That would not add any more to the fiscal note.
No objection.
Before you remove your objection,
All right, I'll keep it on for you.
Representative Coghill, could you explain to the committee and my own edification, you mentioned the three boarding schools at Nenana, Bethel, and where else?
Galena.
Galena, oh, that's right. But it doesn't include Mount Edgecombe. Is Mount Edgecombe handled as a separate entity or
yes.
a different?
Mount Edgecombe is a state-run boarding school, so we absorb both capital costs and the full boarding costs and the full cost of Mount Edgecombe. It's quite a different setup, and these have kind of come from the districts at the ground up and are filling needs both vocationally and for their different areas.
Right.
For example, in Galena, they have people in Galena from all over Western Alaska.
So the term of art is district secondary school boarding program, making that distinction. Very good. Mr. Representative Harris.
Chairman, these are, Representative Coghill, these are, through the chair, these are all strictly private boarding schools, in other words,
no,
not state run?
They're district run. They're not
district.
Private, they're public schools.
Like REAA type run or?
The Galena School District is an actual school district. The Nenana School District is a first class city school district.
Okay.
Bethel, I honestly don't know.
So if I could follow up, Mr. Chairman, let's say in Nenana, the Nenana High School, is that affiliated with the boarding school then?
Yes, the Nenana School.
Public school system.
Yes, in fact, the boarding school itself uses the Nenana Public School for classroom space, but the boarding school is, in fact, going to be separate from the school. So they use, and the same thing is true in Galena and Bethel. They use some of the facilities there. And that was part of the thing that they're doing, is just as economies of scale, saying, we'll put up a boarding area, we'll have our own program, both, like they do special programs in homework, some in vo-tech areas like flying or welding. In Nenana, they do some cultural issues. And then they have, they go to the regular high school for curriculum issues. They're trying to make use of facilities.
Mr. Chairman, what Representative Coghill do, they do as far as eligibility, is it for K through 12 or is it just high school? Or
it's, these are high school.
Has there been any attempt in either one of these, any one of these three different situations where they've done more than high school?
Not to my knowledge. Not in these three.
And my questions are leading because I would really like to see us look closely at regional boarding schools throughout the state, because I think if we're going to in a cost-effective way provide better quality education for certain parts of rural Alaska, we're going to have to look at trying to consolidate to bring the students in. I know that's controversial, but I look at these as somewhat of a pilot project for the beginnings of that type of a system. But
yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I put a time limit on it, because I think we need to take a good hard look at how they're doing. But I can just tell you, just not even anecdotally, I guess it'd be anecdotally to you, but for me, I've seen two of them firsthand, and I can tell you, after meeting with the students, not only watching their grade point average going up, but how they do in the various different exams, I think a lot of it is they go there on purpose. And then both in Galena, Bethel, and Nenana, they all have a waiting list. So these, most of them are searching for opportunities. On the other hand, in this particular bill, I've also got a kind of a hold harmless thing. If you have a school district that says that they drop out at 10 students and they have to close up the school, I'm saying if a student in one of those schools, and I think Eagle is one of those places where they're very close to that, if a student wants to excel, I wouldn't want that to close that whole school down just because we're inviting them into boarding schools and they qualify. So so that's part of the parameter I put on this bill, too. And that's one of the reasons why I had to put a time limit on it, because I don't think we can do that forever. But we have to see one good avenue working and then and just make see if it's a model that we can work off of.
Yeah, kind of a pilot project, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remove my objection.
Any further discussion on House Bill 16? Seeing none, what's the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move it out, unless the sponsor wants to do it. I'd like to move House Bill 16 as amended out of the committee with individual recommendations and any fiscal notes that may be involved.
Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Next, we'll take up House Bill 156. Ms. Cotting, do you want to report? I see we have a committee substitute before us. Would you, Chair, would entertain a motion to adopt the...
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt as a working document CS Trust Bill 156, the slash I, Michelle, or however you say that, 4605 version.
Any objections to adopting the I version? Seeing none, so adopted. Ms. Cotting. Could you explain the differences in the rationale?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Commission on Aging was moved from Department of Administration to HESS in 2003 by executive order, and it's taking a while to make the legislative fixes to implement that change. In 2005, this year, the Commissioner of Administration, who has a seat on that per statute, indicated he's not able to participate as a member of the Commission, and the Commission's no longer under Department of Administration. So this bill replaces that seat with a public seat filled by a senior provider. Now, this simple little bill has had to be amended in every committee it's gone to just to make all the statutes conform. Originally, the seat was filled by a grant recipient. That was perceived as a conflict of interest, even though the the commission no longer administers the grant program, so we took that out. Now, what that seat, which is page one of the CS, line 11, that seat is now filled with a senior services provider regardless of age, because some of the seats have certain age requirements. And on page two, line 31, going on to the next page, as well as page three, lines four and five, we've taken out all the sections that used to give the commission the duty to evaluate grant applicants and make grant awards. They no longer do that, but while that was in statute, it appeared as a conflict of interest with having a provider seat on there. So this just really cleans up the whole section of statutes dealing with the commission and brings it into conformance with actual practice. Hopefully it won't have to be amended anymore.
Don't count on it.
Right. Any questions, Ms. Connie? Representative Perkiewicz.
Thanks. Good to see you, Barbara. And I'm reading in the Aging Commission's backup information, and it looks like at least six persons appointed by the governor have to be 60 years of age or older. So is that why you've got, with the senior services provider, it says regardless of age?
Right. We don't want,
that person to necessarily.
Right, to have to conform with age requirements.
Excuse me. On that point, Ms. Connie, where is the 60-year-old requirement? Is that in regulation?
That's in existing statute. If you look in your backup there, I put in the description of the Aging Commission under Boards and Commissions.
Well, can you direct us to the statutory requirement?
Well, it's given there as 4745200. I don't believe that's included in here.
Well, looks like, well, let's see, we have that in the bill. That's why it's reading. This is only a portion of the. Our trustee committee council is now looking at the statute.
It says it all right. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to?
Representative Cartula, could you illuminate
right,
the committee here?
Right, it's 4745200B, and it says at least included in the section, it says at least six of the persons appointed by the governor shall be 60 years of age or older. At least two of these persons shall be 65 years of age or older. So
we're going to hold our nose on age discrimination here.
Well, I have a question. Yeah, I have a question about not maybe discrimination, but about the language.
Go ahead, Representative Fairfield.
Well, actually, if you say regardless of age, it could be one of the 65 or 60.
It could be.
Right. It just doesn't have to be.
Right.
Okay.
For the record.
Because many people of that age bracket have retired. They're no longer providing services. They're receiving them.
Yep.
Well, it was close to amendment, Barbara, but it looks like you may have dodged the bullet.
I hope so.
I always have a letter of intent to go along with
no.
There'd be no discrimination intended here.
Right. Any further questions?
Or balding senior citizen.
There you go.
We do have a representative of the Alaska Commission on Aging here if there's any questions.
Yes, Nancy's here.
Yeah,
in case you have any questions of the commission representative.
Also available if there's any questions of the committee.
I like to do this, Mr. Chairman. Let's have the person
Harris.
That signed up to testify come up and have
no,
a few
no,
words.
No, it's questions only.
Huh?
Questions only.
Well, I have a question for
him. Okay. Ms. Kerr.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record.
For the record, my name is Nancy Carrican. I'm a health and social services planner for the Commission on Aging.
So you signed up for questions only, right?
I did.
All right,
yes.
I'm going to hit you with a question. Do you support this CS the way it's in front of us?
Through the chair, yes, sir, I do.
That's all I had. Thank you.
any further questions of the witness, Ms. Carrican? Well, thank you very much for coming this morning. We appreciate that. Any further questions of Ms. Conning? Any further questions of the universe?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to move from Committee CS for House Bill 156 to slash I version. That's it, with individual recommendations and any fiscal notes that may be involved.
Any objections to moving Health Bill 156. Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, we'll take up under bills previously heard, the House Bill 121. We have a representative from Bill, Representative Thomas's office. Help us out. HIPAA.
I don't have that one, but I guess we'll just wing it here.
Yeah. Take a brief at ease.
I can discuss it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coghill, would you help us lead us through the forest here?
Mr. Chairman, first I would move that we rescind our action in reporting House Bill 121 out of committee and that we bring the bill back for us for consideration.
Are there any objections on the rescinding action? Seeing none, so ordered. We have before us House Bill 121.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
I also move that we rescind our action in adopting the committee substitute for House Bill 121 rules.
Are there any objections to rescinding our action and adopting the committee substitute? Seeing none, we have the original bill, I believe, back before us.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Right. And Mr. Chairman,
CRA.
Should I?
Oh, it's the the CRA version?
Right.
Okay. Because I'm looking in my file at an L version. That's the blank substitute we just removed.
So that would be the Y version, right?
Where are we at?
Right.
The Y version?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you to my committee to help me out. So we have the Y version back before us. For public testimony, we have with us a representative and sponsor, Representative Thomas. Ms. Schroeder, for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Casey Schroeder, and I'm a legislative aide for Representative Thomas. And I really don't have anything to say. I was just here for questions, if you had any.
Okay, we do have a CS. I was duly informed, Representative Coghill. Would you make a motion to adopt the committee substitute version L?
Well, sure, Mr. Speaker.
I'll do it, John. Just to get it on the record. Chairman, I move that we adopt for working document CS for House Bill 121, the slash L Cook 411.05 version.
Any objection to adopting the committee substitute? Seeing none, we'll adopt it. And do we have extra copy? Representative Coghill needs.
There you can, my copy.
Anybody else? Here we go.
Thank you.
Mr. Schroeder, could you explain the difference with the L, returning to the L version here, or what the distinctions are?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The last time the committee met and discussed House Bill 121, it was a concern of the committee the breadth of the liberal powers that the assembly had in terminating or consolidating a service area. So on page 2 of the CS, there's 1, 2, and 3, and this attempts to rein in the assembly and give them some direction in when they may be able to consolidate or abolish a service area.
Representative Coghill, did you have a chance to look at this CS, or have you prepared your amendment, or is it?
I have a conceptual amendment that I'm going to ask that we amend into this version L of the committee substitute.
Okay, so you were. Is there any questions of Ms. Schroeder?
Good.
We're joined by
Representative Seaton. Representative Cartula.
Oh, Representative Cartula.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And thanks, Casey. You gave us an email, or Janet may have given us the email, from the Department of Commerce, noting that they're still concerned about the application to second class versus home rule borough. But was that to this draft? Were her concerns about this CS or a former draft? Or
Ms. Fathers is here.
Oh, I didn't see her. Yeah, I'm sorry.
She is available. We have a representative from the department.
Great. Well, that was the question, is which draft.
Sally, do you want to come up and join us?
Thank you.
Expedite matters a bit. Did you hear the question from Representative Cartula?
I believe I did. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Sally Sadler, Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I've just seen this work draft. My understanding is that this would still apply to second-class boroughs only. So our concerns would not be removed with the committee substitute.
Okay, thank you.
All fun and games.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Harris.
Since we don't have in front of us yet, but have you seen, Sally, have you seen this proposed amendment here that we have in front of us here?
Through the chair, no, I have not, Representative.
Would you take a couple minutes and read that? I assume somebody's going to offer this thing as a compromise. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but see if that helps you clear up your concerns or not.
Would the committee like, is there further questions of Ms. Schroeder while Ms. Sadler's reading this, or would you like to take a brief at ease to give her a chance to read it? Let's take a brief at ease here.
This bill, Mr. Chairman, thank you, is that in the second class borough and in the interior, we have some legally formulated service areas where they haven't met legally for quite some time. They're not assessing themselves. They don't have people on their commission. There's no live contract. So it's a shell of a service area. Well, the people would like to have in some areas of that, they'd like to have the service. But the borough is restricted from either dissolving it or consolidating it. And there has been some problem about consolidation. So on this one, we're just trying to say in that second-class borough, the abolishment or consolidation of two or more service areas can happen or it doesn't apply if they haven't. I'm trying to get to the place where if no maintenance or construction services has happened over the last 12 months or they haven't legally met over the last year or their contracts don't fit. So I have not been carrying this bill. It's a community and regional affairs bill, but I have been I've been very deeply involved in it, and I've been trying to move along to try to help some of these second-class boroughs. And I understand that there are some challenges between the different borough classes, but I still think the state purview is to allow them the ability to do some of these things. So I have one of the people that has been helping with the bill who is willing to testify. I think Ms. Linda Anderson maybe could help us with some of the reasons why, because she works with the Fairbanks North Star Borough in trying to help solve this problem, and she could speak to it, and then certainly we could have the department help us understand what some of those issues are. But I'm just trying to get a fix is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say in the service areas, if they're not working, the borough needs to have some authority to either dissolve them or get them working again. That's the simple solution I'm trying to find.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Ms. Sadler, do you wish us to speak to the amendment before you make your testimony, or do you want to talk to this the committee substitute? Would that help you?
Mr. Chairman, those are a lot of options. actually, what I'd like to do is defer. I mean, I think our position from the department standpoint is that we understand the situation, the circumstances that have given rise to this legislation. It still gives powers to that home rule or second class borough that a first class home rule borough does not have. So what I'd like to do, if I might, is defer to Margie Vander with the Department of Law, who is here and can probably speak more intelligently to the amendments.
Okay, with that,
Mr. Chairman, maybe I should move the amendment.
Yes, I was going to ask that you move the amendment, Reverend Cargill.
Mr. Chairman, I have to move it conceptually because in drafting, I had this handed to me on the door on the way to the meeting this morning saying we couldn't get all the drafting done. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move the conceptual amendment, which would be, I guess, amendment number one.
Number one.
And if you wish, I will describe it to some degree.
We have it in writing.
Oh, you have it in writing? So fine. The department also has it in writing.
Very good. Do I hear objections for purpose of discussion?
I'm yes. going to object, and could I ask a quick question?
I hear a chorus of objections. Representative Cartulis.
So, through the chair, Representative Cockhill, so this is the amendment then, or are there changes to this?
It's conceptual.
Even?
I mean, in terms of the art, but the substance is there.
But this is the amendment that I would move, in that it has the three major issues that I want to deal with here.
And you're not, again, just a quick question. So you, we're not sure exactly about how the language should go, but this is the general idea.
Right, like your term legally, for example, is that?
Okay.
Representative Coghill, you want to explain what your amendment does?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. This subsection describes what a borough can do, but it says it doesn't apply to a second-class borough in the abolishment or consolidation to a more road services area if these three conditions apply. And the three conditions are, number one, that the taxes haven't been levied for maintenance or construction services over the last year haven't been done, and that there's no balance in the account. Number two is that they haven't legally or properly met. They're not legally constituted because of having no meetings in the last year.
So you can't have a coffee clutch in the kitchen and call it a meeting. Right. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And there are requirements within both the law for the state, if I understand correctly, and in the boroughs. And then number three, if they didn't maintain the road, or they don't, and this is probably where it gets some question. The road maintenance contracts don't meet the minimum road standards to protect the borough from civil liability, because the borough does become responsible for what these road service districts do. And so I think so those three things would apply in this amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Ribson Harris, Van Seaton.
You know, the it seemed like in earlier testimony that the question was, the legal question was, what, if anything, can you allow a second-class borough to do that you don't allow a first-class borough to do? If we're trying to construct something that legally can't be done, are we just spinning our wheels, wasting our time? And I don't know, but I mean, that to me, Margie, you want to come forward and talk to that a little bit? Because, you know, maybe I know that your intent is honorable and the intent of the sponsor is honorable, but are we just beating our head against a wall here trying to do something that legally we can't do? Or do we need to do something for the first class boroughs that right. we do for the second class boroughs? I mean, I don't know, but mm-hmm. it seemed to me like that's a legal question, maybe that should be answered before we. I probably should ask that question before when we had the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Margie Vandor from the Department of Law. Having just seen the conceptual amendment, I don't think it alleviates the issue that we raised before, which is giving a second-class borough, which is your lowest-class borough in the state now. There are no third-class that can be formed anymore, and there are no more that exist. So a second-class borough only has the powers given in statute. And a home rule, their powers are given by a charter. That is their organic law. And to allow now a second-class borough the authority to adjust its service areas, because it is a local matter, in a manner which you don't allow home rules to do, because you've conceptually taken that power away from them no matter what their charter has said. And even though Tam Cook and I kind of disagree as to what a court might say about that, there are still case law that says that a charter on certain very local matters will supersede a statute. But we don't have a test case on this yet, so. But that is my concern, and it's the department's concern at law, that you have given a very specific class of borough authority to amend its service areas under certain conditions that you're not giving to any other borough. And that becomes a special legislation issue as well. I mean, why wouldn't it apply to all boroughs who might have the exact same problem, especially a home rule, which, like I said, if it's in their charter that they can amend their service areas, that the borough government has control, which is where it ought to be. Its service areas have no legal existence separate from the borough. They're really there as advisory committees, which has been a problem with this statute since it was amended. It's the tail wagging the dog. the borough has less control than the service area, and that doesn't make sense anyway. But that aside, this does not alleviate the problem of a second-class borough being given much more authority over its service areas and how to amend them and abolish them and consolidate than you have given a home rule or a first class.
Other question, Representative Stevens.
Yes, I guess I'm confused because, you know, I've tried to wade through the legal opinions, and it seems to me that if we would apply this to home rule cities, first class, what we would be doing is saying you can only use this mechanism, you can no longer use your charter. And that would be a restriction on the ability to use the charter. And it would seem that if we applied this to those categories, we would actually be in violation of the entire principle of letting those home rule and first class boroughs make those decisions locally. I mean, there's nothing that I can see that prevents the boroughs, the first class home rules, from adopting this very provision in their charter. And so they have the ability to do that, but they also have the ability to pass charter amendments, and this would say that the only way you as a home rule can now change these service areas is by this vote of the people. You can no longer use your charter provisions. And it seems, unless I'm missing something, it's kind of the reverse of where we're arguing.
Well, my understanding is that this is actually a restriction. The way the statute reads right now is that in order to abolish or amend these types of service areas, you have to have a vote of the people in the service area in order to amend or abolish. And that is a restriction on home rules. I mean, it's a restriction on any borough to be able to say, we, the borough government, are going to amend this service area because it's in the best interest of the borough and because things have changed. And if you let, you know, only the voters decide how their service area is going to be amended or abolished, then you have given more power to a small section of voters inside a borough as to what a service area should be. And that takes control away from the borough government. And a home rule borough is the government. And if their charter right now already says we can abolish and amend service areas the way we see fit, the argument that is out there and has been, this is the conflict that it has not been tested in court, is whether the statute as it reads right now for these types of service areas, what controls this statute, which doesn't allow them to amend the service area or abolish it or consolidate without a vote of the people, versus the home rule borough government being able to say, we need to amend these borough, these service area boundaries because it's not working. And even though the people there don't make, you know, it's like annexation. They may not want to be annexed. They may not want to share services with a whole new group of people that might have been, you know, a new subdivision comes up and the borough believes it would be best to maybe add that new area to that service area. Well, if you let the people vote in the current service area and they don't want these new people in, then the borough government has no control over that. And service areas really are meant so that the borough has control to provide services in an area that are special to that area. But that's the assembly's determination to make, not the people who live there. I mean, that's not how it was set up. And so if you've got a home rule charter that allows the borough government to make those decisions, this statute right now, as it reads, would not allow the borough government to make that decision without a vote of the people. That is the tail wagging the dog.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative.
Just a quick follow-up. I mean, this doesn't change the requirements or the abilities or the authorities for home rule first class. It's limited to second class. It doesn't say that a home rule can't establish those. All it does is provide that second class can eliminate. And if what we did was provide in here that the only way a home rule first class borough could eliminate a service area is going through this process, then that would be a restriction on the home rule concept.
Well, I guess I would.
Can I ask just a quick question, maybe?
Sure, Representative Cartula.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Jump in here.
Well, it's just because it's so confusing, but it seems that what part of the problem is it's the underlying statute sets us up for this. So would it be better if we went into the underlying statute and backed out to try to give the Home Rule Bureau the same kind of authority that the second, I mean, that we cleared that part up? Could we do that?
Through the
chair. Is that
chair.
A fair question, or do you feel
well, sorry, I just don't see any, I know, sorry, I just don't see the way out of this otherwise.
I'm certainly no expert in this, but it seems to me that the Home Rule boroughs with the ability, with their charters, have, I think that was Representative Seaton's point, they can do it, but the second-class boroughs can't. That's what Representative Coghill is trying to do. Representative Coghill.
Mr. Chairman. And if it was true that the boroughs were setting them up, I would agree. But what's happening is the voters are getting together, formulating a service district under the borough's authority, but they actually vote within their own group to levy a mill rate upon themselves, and then they do the contracting and they do that. And now the commissioner that they want is appointed by the borough. That's true. But they're pretty much doing their own levying, and the borough helps them manage it. But and so it doesn't fit real snugly into what she was saying, that the borough's in charge of formulating, because that's just not entirely true.
Well, I have a technical question on your amendment, Mr. Representative Coghill, and I could direct it to the representative of the Attorney General's office here. In your subsection 3, you indicate that road maintenance contract do not legally require minimum road standards necessary to protect the borough from civil liability. Is that the level of maintenance, or is it the design element of the road itself, or a combination of both? And maybe council, if you have any familiarity there. I know you're not from the Department of Transportation, but do you have a comment about what a legally required minimum road standard would be?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I don't have any background in that area.
I can appreciate
and
that.
Chairman, that would be set up by the borough standards. That would be an ordinance in the borough. So they have minimum road standards for passage, for height and drainage, I think.
Well, we got a long history of case law in the state about road maintenance liability, the famous Phillips case and so forth, et cetera, but I guess I'm kind of troubled by that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
I had another question on the amendment, and it's also in the L draft. And it seems like it says this subsection does not apply. And then it says if, one, the taxes have not been paid. And it seems like we've got this double negative that we want to actually say. I mean, is that what we want to say? Is it that we haven't been paying the taxes, then we can't terminate them? And then we would only be terminating the ones that had been paying their taxes and had been meeting. And am I reading that construction wrong?
The amendment that I was putting forward, Mr. Chairman, was that the taxes hadn't been levied. And I think that would be a legal way of saying the service district is not levying itself any taxes for those services. So in other words, there's no money to do anything. So they start losing their standing by saying we're not going to do that. And I think a lot of it stems from the discussion that we've had over the last couple of years on what happens with municipal revenue sharing and that type of thing. Many of these service districts got a portion of that from the boroughs and had not levied themselves any taxes. Now they're finding out that they have to either do that or nothing happens. And the borough is now in the position of how do we dissolve something that is not active?
Mr. Chairman.
I think that's the dilemma.
Representative Seaton, I mean, I can appreciate your question regarding our drafting manual and how we draft laws in the state so they're unintelligible.
I guess what I'm just trying to get at is the purpose of the section or the subsection is that we can eliminate non-performing areas, and yet the wording says that this subsection does not apply if they haven't paid their taxes. And I think that what we're trying to say is that this subsection only applies if you haven't paid your taxes, if you haven't met, and if you haven't done. And what we actually are, anyway, I think conceptually that's it.
And Mr. Chairman?
If we want to, you want to hear from Ms. Anderson, or do you want to just? Representative Coggins.
I think that the department brings up a good point. And I think that I haven't had a chance to read deeply enough into this event. I think Representative Seaton brings up a good point on the drafting. And I would hate for us to proceed on something that is conceptual at this point. So I did think that it would be appropriate, though, if we had Ms. Anderson, who is representing the North Star Borough, come and explain to us some of the rationale. And at this point, I would ask that we hear this, and my suggestion is to hold it so that we can get either the exact language and look into it. And then if we're going to cross the barrier of not being able to make an exception for the second-class borough, I'd like to have a little more definitive on that.
Sure.
And I haven't had a chance to study. So with that, I'd ask that we bring Ms. Anderson up.
Well, Ms. Schroeder, do you know if the sponsor would find this, would be okay with holding this over until we have this resolved, do you think?
That would be absolutely fine.
Just to make sure he knows that we're not.
That would be a good idea, or it might not pass.
Well, thank you very much for the witnesses, and we'd ask Ms. Anderson to come up and briefly respond to our inquiry this morning, and then we will be holding the bill over and adjourning. So. Linda,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Linda Anderson. I represent the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I'm not sure which question to fire at first here, but I think on Representative Seaton's point about the double negative, in the L version, and I think in the CNRA version as well, when we say the new language, this subsection does not apply in a second-class borough, we're referring to the preceding language. So we're saying that the election won't apply in a second-class borough, and the assembly can then have the power if these three criteria are met. So I don't believe it is incorrectly drafted.
I agree, but it's just another case of our drafting manual.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, before we leave here, should we?
Okay. The next piece, the amendment that you have before you, when this committee last met, there was concern from the Mat-Su borough and from some of those second class boroughs that felt that, or actually it was just specifically Mat-Su, that felt like the CNRA version was too broad and that an assembly might take advantage of service areas to consolidate powers. And so in working with the concerns of the Mat-Su borough, Representative Stoltz in particular, and I think Representative Corian had those same issues, Fairbanks North Star Borough came back with the amendment that you have before you that's conceptual to tighten and to put further restrictions on the assembly, tighten up that criteria so that in fact we couldn't abolish or consolidate unless the criteria is tighter. So we've put some really, really tall sideboards on the powers of the assembly to be able to act. Representative Coghill's correct. In revenue sharing days, back in, I don't know who remembers the old Senate Bill 168 money, but that was per capita money that went out to everybody. And road service areas, 109 of them popped up in our community because everybody was getting state funds with little or no effort times have changed. Obviously, now our borough finds itself in a legal predicament and cannot manage these road service areas because we have non-responsive participants, participants at all. So the language in version L was proposed by, I believe, Representative Stoltz. The language that Representative Coghill has was proposed by the borough to dovetail with version L. Because of a couple of instances, it wasn't quite broad enough for us in terms of those areas, for example, that currently have a contract. This version L says that there's no road maintenance contract. You could have a contract to remove the snow, and maybe they remove the snow once in a winter, but their roads are still not passable, and the contract isn't extensive enough to maintain the roads to the borough ordinance standards that's adopted. Our borough, Mat-Su, Kenai, all the boroughs have road standards that the roads have to be maintained to that level. And in fact, that's not happening in our community. So we needed a little bit broader language there, as you see in the borough amendment. To the issue of the legality, the bigger issue of powers and unified municipalities and second-class boroughs, I think you'll see, if you look at the very last bottom line summary here from Ms. Tam Cook, who we, obviously you folks rely on her tremendously, and Title 29 expert, I think, is an understatement to her ability. But this is not specialized legislation if, in fact, it applies to all second-class boroughs, and that's what we were doing. The bottom line is unified municipalities have not asked for this provision because they don't need it. They're not at the table wanting this, and they can address their problems in other fashions, and do. So I think I think if you have time to look at Ms. Cook's legal opinion on the broader issue of should home rules have this power too, we are here asking you for a policy call today as second-class borough. Home rules are not. And I think at the end of the day, you want to make sure you stand the test of constitutionality, and Tam Cook has given you a very strong case for why this statute would be upheld if you adopted this legislation.
A query, how many second-class boroughs are there in the state of Alaska?
I believe there are 9.
Okay, so and they could be more or less, and they could be
most of
the
them.
Future, so.
The only unified boroughs are Anchorage and Juneau.
Right.
All the rest of them are second-class boroughs. Yeah.
So this have general applicability statewide. So
absolutely.
Doesn't hold water.
Absolutely.
Any further questions of the witness? We're going to hold open the public testimony, and we have before us an amendment pending. Because we have no quorum, we can't dispose of that amendment, so we're going to adjourn with the amendment pending for the record. With that, we'll adjourn at 9:30.